Welcome to Voices of the Community. I am your host, Eric Estrada. This episode is part one of a highlight compilation from our 2019 series, From Bankruptcy to Reinvention, The City of Stockton. This episode has been remastered and features interviews with changemakers that helped reinvent Stockton from the wreckage of the past. Join our host, George Koster, and our co-host, Nick McClendon, as we highlight the voices and discussions that transformed Stockton. Our first voices are Tasha Dixon, Michael Tubbs' aunt, Ricole Dixon, Michael Tubbs' mother, and Barbara Nicholson, Michael Tubbs' grandmother, as they discuss Michael Tubbs' upbringing.
So yeah, where did it come from, the whole idea of giving back, getting engaged in the community?
Well, I guess I'd need to say to start from church. I mean, we're very involved with community involvement. We love to serve. We're servants. Mm-hmm. That's what we always said. We're servants first. You know, we're always here to help others. So we always will go out and do community work, like go feed the homeless or gather clothes and give to a church that's giving it away to people in need. You know, that was our passion.
And we're also very humble. That's very important, just to be humble. Yeah.
That's from your face?
Yeah, and the personality too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because even while my daughters were going out, being servants, you know, working within the community with the homeless and, you know, the poor, they also had their children when they were young doing the mm-hmm. same thing. Like, they would go to nursing home, mm-hmm. minister there, out on the streets, serving meals with different organizations. So we started that with them.
At a young age,
coming up.
So they got a real sense that, you know, it's important to give back.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
Yes.
And to your point, the humility of giving back without getting recognition.
Exactly.
That's been.
And that's one thing I love about my nephew is he doesn't want the recognition. He just does it and really don't want to be, you know, bankrupt or never given any high praise. He doesn't like that.
When he decided to run for city council, what was your reaction to that?
No.
Right.
No. Come back to Stockton. Yes. Go somewhere to make some money.
Yeah. In the many conversations I've had with people, and this is my 10th conversation in the last 3 days, you know, he was driven to.
He was. We knew it. Yeah.
And again, I think that comes back to the fact that, you know, he started in a young age.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's you want to give back. Yeah, you just want to get back to the city. You know, I made it, so I'm coming back to help you make it.
Yeah.
What do you feel has been his biggest impact so far as a city council person, leader?
I think being a role model. You know, younger kids could see him, and like he's young, and he's a city council. He was born, you know, he was raised up not in a...
Raised up not having everything given unto him, but, you know... Knowing that it takes hard work.
Yeah. And, right, so he's a motivator. He just reminds kids that you can make it no matter what age you are. You know, yes, I'm 25 years old, and I'm a city council. So if I can do it, you can do it.
The whole idea of being a role model to youth in the community.
That's correct, yes.
Not only you, though, to adults.
I was just going to say that. That's
exactly.
That's my impression.
Yes, everyone.
If he's running for mayor now, what would you ultimately like to see happen with regards to his political goals, but also, more importantly, his community, his desire to do more for the community of Stockton?
I would just like for the whole community to put aside their differences, but to come together and to unite here in Stockton and work together with him so that his vision that he has for the city, you know, it's something positive that it'll work out on behalf of all the people of Stockton. But he can't do it alone. They have to come together with everyone, you know, that way.
Coming up next is our co-host Nick McClendon and his interview with Dr. Rebecca Fenton, pediatric resident at Seattle Children's Hospital.
This is Nick McClendon. I am here with Rebecca Fenton and in Seattle, right?
Yeah, so I'm originally from Sacramento and then basically decided that I wanted to be kind of a different part of the West Coast and so came here for residency with my husband and I'm doing a pediatric residency at Seattle Children's.
Awesome. Now, we here in San Francisco are doing a interview series on Michael Tubbs And his mayoral candidacy, his campaign, and his reinvention of Stockton movement. How well do you know Michael?
I know him very well. We met actually freshman year of college. It felt like we had lots of mutual friends, and everybody on both ends were just saying, like, you need to meet that person. And then Corey lived out, but we had this first primary class that we had to do the first quarter of freshman year, where we ended up not only being in the same class, but also in the same section. And I kind of, at the end of it, was just like, went up to him saying, do you know this person, this person, this person? I've heard from all of them that I need to meet you. So hi, my name is Rebecca. And from there is where our friendship began. He shared very similar passions as I do as far as education, just improving the communities that we come from. And so I remember very early on being very impressed by that and wanting to do anything that I could to be able to support some of his visions. And it's been so great to see how he's accomplished that since then.
How early on did he hit you with these big ambitions to sort of change, or just even the aspirations of the reformation of society around us, if you will, from Michael?
Yeah. So from a ideas perspective, it was immediately like the things that he would comment about during our section were always related to his experiences, particularly in Stockton, as well as kind of the hopes that he had for communities and how he would hope to implement those. But as far as practically, it was also quite early. I remember messaging him over our first Thanksgiving break and asking him, oh, what are you up to? Expecting answers like watching TV or hanging out with friends. And instead he writes, I'm going to help kids apply to college. And I said, oh, that sounds cool. Like, I want to help, thinking that it was going to be some kind of small scale, just, you know, a couple of friends helping a couple of students. And instead, he shared with me this vision that he had for the Phoenix Scholars. And from there, I was involved immediately.
So, and that's how you know Michael, is through Phoenix Scholars. And can you tell us a little bit more about Phoenix Scholars?
Sure. So basically, the Phoenix Scholars is now a nonprofit that basically is based at Stanford, where Stanford students are training fellow students to serve as mentors for students from low-income backgrounds. Many of the students that we help are the first in their families to go to college, and we basically recruit them at the end of their junior year, support them through the entire application process, selecting colleges, applying for scholarships. And we've had the success of having all of our kids go on to four-year colleges, and many of them receiving significant financial aid to be able to support those efforts. And so that started from that very simple Facebook message of, I'm helping kids apply to college. Michael Tabbs' inspiration was the fact that he actually was on message boards as a senior in high school looking for help as far as wanting to apply to elite colleges and having the grades to be able to do so, but being in an environment where many kids did not go on to Stanford, and so he didn't have teachers around him who understood what that process looked like and what your personal statement should really include and things like that. He ended up reaching out to a counselor who offered through online to basically read his essays, help him through the process. And he was so impacted by that. And certainly it turned out so well that he not only went to Stanford, but was also a Coca-Cola scholar and received multiple financial aid offers and scholarships that he wanted to be able to give that back to other students like him. So we basically recruit students from all over California, many of whom do not come from communities that are not college going, recognizing that we shouldn't be limited by who's near us and the fact that many students have phones and access to the internet, that we can be able to provide that same support no matter where they are in the state.
How important do you think it is to come back like Michael? And where do you see Michael fitting in along our state's mayors or government?
Yeah, I think that impact is tremendous. I think that there's nobody who knows a community better than somebody who came from that. And certainly there's always well-meaning people who want to go into areas that they have no experience being in before. But I think having both the passion as well as the experience just can't be beat. And so that's why I think Stanford as a whole has been so proud of Michael for going back into counseling and are very excited and supportive. We hope he can accomplish as a mayor.
Any other stories outside of his campaign or even off campus that you know of Michael?
Yeah. So one thing I love is actually use his personal statement that he wrote for Stanford as inspiration for many students, because I actually come from a much more privileged background. My father's a physician. My mom is a nursing professor. And so for me, the inspiration to work with the communities that we helped with Phoenix Scholars was recognizing that my parents were actually first-generation college students, and I recognized how different my life looked from their life growing up just because of the fact that they were able to go to college. And so my hope is to be able to give that same experience to the students I'm helping so that they will literally have generational impact because of having a college degree. So I often share Michael's story just as inspiration for them of recognizing that here's somebody who comes from similar communities to you, where Michael's mom did not have a college degree. He grew up recognizing that she had the skill level to be promoted, but was often held back because of not having a degree. And in addition to that, Michael's father was actually incarcerated for most of his life, and he met him for the first time at 11 years old. And so in his personal statement for Stanford, he talks about the fact that his father told him, as a Black man in this country, you have two options. You either are dead or end up here. And I feel like there's often this sense that that's the only options that we have. And Michael certainly could have internalized that, having grown up in that environment. And instead, he decided to become exactly the opposite of what his father kind of projected his future might be, and basically tried to seek all the opportunities his mother was not able to have, and uses that inspiration to talk to other students about the fact that, he calls it like the poem by Tupac, the rose that grew from concrete. This idea that you could become beautiful things from these very troubled and challenging environments.
That's awesome that you know that. I was definitely going to want to be one of my questions to ask you is what that poem meant to you. I'm really glad you're familiar with it.
Yeah, and he does a camp every summer in Stockton that I wish I had the opportunity to be involved in, where he basically helps students from the community. It's kind of a leadership program for them and really inspires them to recognize that even as a teenager, they can have a huge impact in their environment and kind of making a difference. And so I think that poem is huge inspiration to that, because often just there's this assumption that young people can't accomplish much. And I think Michael's whole life story proves the opposite. And I'm so glad that he uses himself as an example and really empowers kids to do the same.
Coming up next is Nicholas Haddon, founder and executive director of the San Joaquin County Pride Center.
So what became the mission of the Pride Center?
So initially the mission was just having a safe space, and we thought that the community would come and be served in our four walls. And we quickly realized that wasn't the case, and that what our primary responsibility was is to influence our community to shift their perception of LGBT people and create their own safe spaces. You know, I can't raise enough money to have a Pride Center in Lodi, in Tracy, in Ripon, where it's needed even more so than in Stockton. Stockton is like the urban hub, very progressive, democratic population, but it's cities like Escalon, cities like Ripon, you know, where we hear of isolation, where it's really needed. And the conservative values, the agriculture values of this area still reign. And so we reached out to school districts. We've reached out to churches in those cities, and we found individuals who are supportive of the LGBT community, and we just work with them to encourage further acceptance. One of the first school districts that we did a sensitivity training at was in Linden. Now, you know, if I were to go to Linden school board, I probably would get laughed out of the room. But educators get it, and educators understand that you need a safe space for everybody in order for children's education to thrive. And so we've been welcome and really successful in building those coalitions.
Is there a drive within your organization, the community at large, to try to secure more government foundational funding to execute your mission and the requirements?
Definitely. You know, and we have been engaging in negotiations with the state public health, and we're on the eve of getting funding, substantial funding from the state. And Michael Tubbs was very helpful in us securing that. We had a tour with officials here at the Pride Center, and I had a bunch of people lined up to speak. And at the last minute, I was like, there's something missing. And I called Michael that morning and said, can you be here at 1 p.m.? And he changed his schedule and was here and spoke on the need to support our community. And it can be tough sometimes for African-American community leaders to stick their neck out and be supportive of the LGBT community. And if you look at some of the ugliness on social media towards Michael, there's always this tinge of homophobia. And I think it's because he's willing to stick his neck out and be supportive. And so we're doing things like that. We're also using the LCAP process through our school districts for school funding. And we've been very successful. We were able to get Stockton Unified to earmark $100,000 for LGBT sensitivity training. The first school district in the state of California, by the way, to put specific LGBT language in their LCAP. More progressive than San Francisco, more progressive than Los Angeles. I'm very proud of that. And that was our lobbying and working with parents, working with students and going to the school board, going to the committee meetings, and making the argument that we need to fund, you know, sensitivity training for our educators.
We're halfway through our powerful conversation from our 2019 series, From Bankruptcy to Reinvention, The City of Stockton. You have heard from the voices of Tasha Dixon, Michael Tubbs' aunt, Ricole Dixon, Michael Tubbs' mother, Barbara Nicholson, Michael Tubbs' grandmother, and Nicholas Haddon, founder and executive director of the San Joaquin County Pride Center. Thank you to our incredible sponsors and listeners like you for supporting Voices of the Community. Stay with us, more highlights ahead. Voices of the Community is made possible by generous support from the Zellerbach Family Foundation, dedicated to ensuring vibrant work is created, new voices are celebrated, and diverse communities have opportunities to thrive. Learn more at zff.org. Voices of the Community is also supported by the Peaceful World Foundation, fostering a culture of global peace through hosted conversation and education. Discover more at peacefulworldfoundation.org. Welcome back to Voices of the Community, where today's conversations are from our 2019 series on the reinvention of Stockton and how the city provided an opportunity for city leaders and residents to clear away the wreckage of the past and reinvent their city. Let's continue the discussion. Coming up next is Fred Scheel, administrator of STAND, Stocktonians Taking Action to Neutralize Drugs.
So, and on my conversation with Michael yesterday, he had mentioned the liquor store that you guys are able to just close down. Yes. So you can share a little bit about the liquor store, and then I understand you have the first right to do something with the liquor store site.
There's the liquor store, and then there's a large vacant lot just north of it. So okay. There are two separate issues here. The large vacant lot is owned by the city. It's a redevelopment project that the city now has to dispose of that vacant lot. And we have been given, because of our success with the housing in the neighborhood, the city's going to allow us to have exclusive negotiating rights for that parcel over the next 6 months to put commercial retail, maybe housing on. The liquor store just south of it has been a 15-year disaster. Just to show how blinded a community can be about something that's embarrassing. Here you got a liquor store that's been operating for 15 years. When you go in there, I won't even bother to describe it. What I'll tell you is when people go through the line and they ring up your purchases, it's thing in the cash register opens, but nothing gets recorded on a tape. There's no sales tax charged. If you're buying returnable bottles, there's no CRV charged. If you're using your food stamp card, your EBT card, nothing gets recorded on that. How can a business operate without paying a recording or having the documentation for all these different taxing entities? From the franchise tax board to the county to the city, there's so many regulatory bodies there. The only way that kind of operation can go on is because those authorities that are responsible do not give a holy hoot. And the drug trafficking went on, and the drug dealers inside the store. At least we're trying, but nobody wanted to enforce it. It wasn't that big follow. As long as it was there, it was okay. That's the message that the neighborhood gets. And when the neighborhood complains, all the city fathers and mothers go, well, why don't you just get your act together? We were literally told that at city council meetings. Like, they're not responsible. Well, I've said it repeatedly that one of the best things that happened to this city was bankruptcy. Because with bankruptcy, we had a new city manager, and he brought in new city department heads. And with that, a new culture. And the old actors, the old business interests, and I include unions as part of a business interest, they've had to step back, because they're the ones that got us into the mess between the housing developers and the unions that they brought along with them and bought them out and co-opted them. They've had to go, okay, well, it wasn't us. So they've had to quit playing politics. And so in the process, now you're getting decisions made at a city level that are for the whole city. They're looking at everything involved, not just pockets where individuals want the city to basically cover and pay for them. right at that same time, Michael decides to run for office and becomes a city councilman. So now he's suddenly got a whole new group of high-level staff to work with that really understand. We got some good people. Our city manager now is really good. And this is coming from someone. I'm going to say this publicly, and it's going to, because I told all the city staff, I have been a huge critic of the city for the last 20 years. Tremendous critic. Staff have been controlled and manipulated and have done nothing for these poor and older neighborhoods. All that's changed. I'm a huge supporter of the city now. And they're doing great stuff. I sure hope it continues. And I give them all the support and all the credit in the world because they are addressing the issues, they're looking at the issues, they're being honest about the continued poverty down here, the continued lack of commercial development, and they're working with us. Are they giving us everything they want? No, because they still got to deal with the whole city. But they're being fair, and they're giving us a chance. And because of that, things are getting done, and the attitudes are changing in the neighborhood. Has it changed everybody? No, because it's a lot of resentment. I mean, you can't just... There was a grand jury report that came out last year. I don't know if you saw it with... There were two of them. One was about the complete lack of code enforcement in the poor neighborhoods for the last 50 years. Just allow the slumlords to have willy-nilly, and then blame it on the neighborhoods for being so run down. And the other one was just the absolute lack of investment and lack of attention to South and East Stockton. And the grand jury just slammed them. And city council and city staff basically said, yeah, it's true. You're right. Where in the past, city councils, before the bankruptcy, would have been, no, look at the long list of things we've done. And then you could lay out a whole bunch of thousands of teeny little details and make it sound like, you've really done great things, when in reality, it was just all pretend.
Up next is Dylan Delvo, co-founder of Little Manila Rising.
And I think people in Stockton, you're just used to that. You just figure that's the way it is.
But really, it's your moral bankruptcy of the Crosstown, south of the Crosstown Freeway.
Yeah.
The city and its leaders, et cetera, morally bankrupt in that it was just an underserved, almost abandoned area.
Yeah. And it's the leaders, but also definitely the developers as well. I think part of the marketing of development at the time, you know, both to in the 1960s, 70s and on was, you know, these developers would build on land. It used to be farmland. And it was all to the north. And so they really changed the perception of upward mobility in Stockton, in that upward mobility in Stockton means you got to live up north. And so a lot of folks who may have grown up and lived life, maybe found the person that they married, the idea of community, kind of formed their idea of community and everything. In order for them to be considered successful in Stockton, you had to move up north and you had to buy into their property, right? And so one of the things that we always talk about is like, well, we were kind of misled. Rather than building community, we buy into community. And the people in our community who have, well, the richest people in our community are the people who created those conditions in Stockton, right? It's affected the mindset of our young people in that I just need to get out of this place, right? So constant, you know, brain drain from South Stockton to even the other communities or just to North Stockton, that this is a place for the poor and, you know, this is a place for upwardly mobile. And although these folks have profited greatly from it, there has been no reinvestment into the communities that they have hurt the most, whether it be, you know, building affordable housing or building anything new in that area, or just donating, right? And I think that's probably the biggest issue, one of the biggest issues that we have, in that as we engage in other communities as a nonprofit, we're starting to learn how other nonprofits survive. We don't have the same culture in our community of philanthropy that other folks do, other cities do.
Thank you.
Lastly, we have Jasmine Delafosse, senior regional organizer with the Gathering for Justice.
And where would you like to see it go? Your vision going forward, you've been at this for 3 years.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure seems like a lifetime.
I know.
Where would you like to see it go? Because obviously you're starting to really get some momentum in the community itself and getting ownership from the community members. What are some of the resources that you would need to make that happen?
God, it's such a big vision. I want to be able to see kids walk down their street and play because they deserve to. I want to see kids graduate from high school and be eligible to go to college because they deserve that right. I want to be able to say for those who think that college isn't an option, but they're career ready by the time they're graduating high school, and that they have opportunities to go into these career fields would be amazing. I envision more safe spaces in the community to be easy access for them. What I'm hoping is that our young folks who we are really engaging with and training up would venture off to college, but remember to come back and serve their communities. And we hear so often young people tell us, I'm going to come back and do what you're doing, or I'm going to come back and run for city council because I want to change my city. You know, we hear kids saying, I want to get into the health field because I want to be able to serve and open up clinics and urgent cares in my community. I've heard our young people say they want to come back, and even now they're beginning to work on a restorative justice program that would be able to help young people seek help from trauma at a young age. And so for me, I think if we can do all that and provide opportunities like that, that is what I'm hoping for this leads to, that people would understand that collaboration is important and partnerships, and that if we can put whatever aside to serve our community, we could be a lot farther. And I think our coalition has done a great job in really bringing all different kind of folks to the table and really knowing that collaboration is important. And so I'm hoping to see that citywide.
That concludes part one of our highlight episode from our 2019 series, From Bankruptcy to Reinvention, The City of Stockton. A special thanks to our guests, Tasha Dixon, Ricole Dixon, Barbara Nicholson, Rebecca Fenton, Nicholas Haddon, Fred Scheel, Dylan Delvo, and Jasmine Delafosse for their insights on reinventing Stockton. Visit voicesofthecommunity.com and go to the Stockton's Rise from Bankruptcy series to explore more about our guests and their respective organizations, along with how you can get engaged in supporting their work. While you're on our website, we invite you to visit our archive of past series, sign up for our newsletter, and click on the donate button to help us create episodes like this and receive awards like the 2025 Alliance for Community Media Foundation Hometown Media Awards for Best Informational Talk Show. Stay tuned for part two of our highlight compilation from this series, and stay tuned for our next series, Making the Invisible Visible, as we amplify the voices of our unhoused neighbors and the people and organizations that support them. Today's episode was made possible through our co-production partnership with KWDC 93.5 FM, the home of San Joaquin Delta College's digital media. We also want to thank both Ariana Brager and Leo Marquez of KWDC for all their wonderful support of this special series. A special thanks to our hosts George Coster and Nick McClendon, and thanks to Casey Nance from Citron Studios for the graphics magic. Voices of the Community is made possible by generous support from the Zellerbach Family Foundation, dedicated to ensuring vibrant work is created, new voices are celebrated, and diverse communities have opportunities to thrive. Learn more at zff.org. Voices of the Community is also supported by the Peaceful World Foundation, fostering a culture of global peace through hosted conversation and education. Discover more at peacefulworldfoundation.org. Take Voices of the Community with you on the go. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. Enjoying the show? Please rate and review us on your favorite app. It helps more people discover these important stories. Go to youtube.com/@GeoCoster to watch or listen to all of our past and future episodes. And you can always go to voicesofthecommunity.com to listen and watch our 5 series and from our archives. Have feedback or ideas for shows? We'd love to hear from you. Email george@georgecoster.com. I'm Eric Estrada from San Francisco. On behalf of our team, thank you for joining us. Until next time, remember, your voice matters.